Welcome, listeners, to the Cozy Corner with Alexia Gordon, the podcast that highlights cozy and traditional mysteries. You won't find stories filled with explicit sex or graphic violence. You will find interviews with authors who create crime fiction filled with intriguing plots, engaging characters, and high-quality writing. Thanks for listening. Hello, listeners, and welcome to another episode of The Cozy Corner with Alexia Gordon. I'm Alexia Gordon, author and host of the podcast. My guest today is Julianne Lindsay, also known as Bree Baker, author of the Seaside Cafe Mysteries. Julie joins me in the corner today to chat about Partners in Line, the sixth in her series, written as Bree Baker. Welcome, Julie.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Now, I think it's fair to call a six-book series long-running. So would you tell us what your protagonist, Everly Swan, is up to this time out?
Sure. Okay, so Everly Swan lives in a fictitious town in the Outer Banks, North Carolina. And she has a seaside home, and she runs an iced tea shop out of the first floor. So when she's not sleuthing, she is serving tea and in her cafe, iced tea. And this time around, the island is excited about an annual play that really goes on down there. They reenact in an outdoor amphitheater, they reenact a play called The Lost Colony. And that is when it's about Roanoke, right? It's about the first settler that was born here, Virginia Dare, and how her grandpa went away to get supplies and it took a year to come back and the entire village, you know, the entire town is gone. In the course of that play, her friend Matt, who's an EMT, Everly's friend Matt, is accused of murder. And of course, she steps in because she can't have anyone slandering her buddy Matt's name.
Now, you mentioned that the play is based on a real play?
It is. The islands get very excited about it. They're very proud of it. On the website, it calls it the heart of the island. It's a huge tourist draw. As many times as I've been there, I've never gotten to see the play, so that is kind of a bummer. But definitely on the bucket list, I think 100% worth going if you've ever get to the islands.
And for those of us who are not as familiar with Carolina history as we should be, can you tell us a little bit about the Lost Colony of Roanoke?
Sure. I wish I knew more than I do, but so the English, right? They come across the Atlantic and they find land. But if you're familiar with the North Carolina coast, there are all these barrier islands, it runs from, you know, they start up in Virginia, they go along the coast of North and South Carolina. And it's this narrow strip of land that at some places it's only a mile wide. And then there's the bay and then the mainland. So ships coming across 300 years ago, they hit land and they stopped. And they set up a colony there at Roanoke and got things going. It was very hard, the weather and just, you know, and it had never been inhabited. So they set up their town and the grandfather, Virginia Dare's grandfather. So she was the first baby born here. He got to see her born and he went to go get more supplies. And it took a year round trip to get back. And when he came back, the entire village was gone. There was not, you know, no one left a note. There were no signs of where they'd been. There was no indication of why they'd gone. There weren't bodies. So it wasn't as if they'd starved or died of the elements or hunger or anything like that. They were just gone. And to this day, we don't know where they went. They're just gone.
You have a theory about where they went?
I don't. Aliens? No, I don't. I'm not sure. I hope that they all just moved, you know, someplace safer. Hopefully they all moved on and set up, and just due to lack of technology, they just never, you know, hopefully they were okay, because it doesn't seem good.
Is your one theory that they had integrated with one of the local Native American tribes?
Mm-hmm. I love that, first of all. That's my favorite. The idea that they found, I don't know, a help, friendship, camaraderie that they were able to make it through and set up somewhere else. I like that the best.
Friendship and camaraderie, as with many cozies, is a big part of your book, Partners in Lime. So how do you create the supporting characters that kind of help fill out that cozy village that readers love so much?
I'm often asked if I see myself in any of the characters, and I think I might be guilty of putting myself, Mary Sue style into all the books a little bit as the heroine. And I try really hard to create a cast that's going to complement her, that's going to be the support system that character needs. And I always do try to pick one or two that kind of get on her nerves, because cozy heroines really are genuinely good, but they're still human. So in this particular series, my heroine has a nemesis. She actually thinks of her as her nemesis, a little girl. So she's a grown woman now, but as a child, Everly's mother died. In the story, she died of a broken heart. She couldn't get past the loss of her husband and Everly's father. And round about middle school, this girl, Mary Grace Chatsworth, came to the island and told all of Everly's friends that her brother wasn't dead. She joined the circus just to get away from Everly so she wouldn't have to raise her. And that hostility simmers 20 years later.
I can certainly see that, why that person would be a nemesis. And you don't have to name any real names, but do you ever put people who perhaps irritated you in the past in your book as one of those irritating characters?
I haven't, but as sometimes, quite often, actually, in each of my series, I will just put names of friends, of neighbors, of, there's so many, you don't realize how many characters are in a book, really, until you're trying to write one, and then another one, and then a new series, and everybody needs a different name. And at one point, I was just stumped, and a lack of time, and I needed to move on, and I just used like everyone up and down my street at that time. And they thought it was so much fun that I thought, well, this is the way to go. So now I quite frequently populate new books with just people from my life, or from my reader group, just people I know, and they get a kick out of it. They enjoy it. And I don't know, it works. And our moms spend all this time trying to name us, right? So why make up new names when some moms have picked the perfect names already? And I go with it.
And speaking of moms, and you mentioned Everly's mother, Everly traces her, or her family traces their history in your town of Charm, which is a charming name for a town, back hundreds of years. Now, in a lot of the stories, the protagonist is kind of the newcomer to town. So how did having a character with a history in the community influence the story?
I think her roots actually impact quite a bit of the story. Everly, sometimes you're so close to it, you can't see it. And being grown and raised there, she doesn't always see what maybe the sheriff sees, or his au pair that comes with him, that she's kind of the island's sweetheart, so to say. Everybody kind of talks about her family, because it's just very unusual to be able to trace your family back more than a few generations. And she can go, the Swans go all the way back to the Salem witch trials, in which things got hairy and they moved. They left, they took off, they found the islands, they settled down, and they've been there ever since. And so that alone, their origin, leads to speculation, and her family's a little odd. And they carry on some of those traditions, some things that they needed 300 years ago, like beekeeping, extensive gardening, all of these things that kind of get the locals whispering, but they love it. They love the history and the intrigue and the lore that surrounds her family. And I think that really helped me create Everly, because I imagine now, what would it be like to grow up in this environment? What kind of child does that make? And it helped me form the secondary characters too, because how do they see her? The ones that maybe have known her their whole life and knew the aunts, versus the newcomers, the sheriff and his au pair. How do they see her and interact with her?
And how do you balance revealing Everly's family history while still avoiding doing just, giant info dump of all of her backstory?
That's hard. I was talking to a new writer just recently, and that's the tricky part in a series. For me, it's the hardest part to start a new book and to know that some readers are coming to it as old hat. They know probably as much or more than I do about the characters. And then there's going to be people that just pick the book up for the first time and they're giving it a try. And then to try to give enough information early on so that new readers are not lost because this is new to them, and that old readers don't want to thump me on the head because they've heard all this and they're here for a new story. That can be really, really challenging. I spend more time on those first three chapters often than the entirety of the rest of the book.
One thing you do hint at some in the backstory, and you sort of alluded to it with mentioning the Salem witch trials. You talk about family curses and haunted houses. It's not really a paranormal cozy, but
No.
those elements make me wonder, did the folklore of the Carolinas or perhaps even Massachusetts influence the series?
Absolutely. I have been visiting the Outer Banks annually with my family just absolutely forever. Once a year, long vacation, long week, 10 days, whatever we can get. And I would always sit there and read about the lore. There was ghost walks pre-pandemic. You could do ghost walks there. And there's just so much history. Every tiny little town has at least two museums of, it's just rich in this history, and it seems so foreign. It's just right across the bay, but it's like its own culture, its own vibe, its own place. I think of it in some ways like I do up big in New Orleans. It just feels different there, and it's the thick history. And so that definitely impacted it. And the other thing I think is me. I get really geeked out on the concept of magic. Is there magic in the world? And what does that mean? Does it mean hocus pocus magic? Is it just, the beauty of nature magic? And I've tried really hard in every one of these books to imply that there is magic, but not to tell the reader what kind of magic it is, because I think the beauty of books is that they are what we need them to be when we read them. So those people that love magic, like practical magic in the books, are going to see that. And the people that just enjoy, the idea of it are going to think it's really neat and sweet, but obviously not magic because that's not real. And yeah, so I've kind of tried to stay right on that line without going either way, all the way to the end.
And then you mentioned how the Outer Banks being islands make it very different than life on the mainland. So what were some of the challenges associated with setting a series on an island? I mean, it's you can't just have them hop in the car and drive three states away easily. So what were some of the challenges about having your series on an island?
That's a good one. I didn't work any of those challenges that I would personally, because I always dream about, I'm going to move to the Outer Banks every year when I'm there visiting. I think, wouldn't it be nice to just stay? But then I worry about weather, hurricanes, evacuation, getting to proper hospital care, like true emergent care and things like this. And I tried to avoid those as I wrote the books. I tried to make sure that this tiny town of charm, it has a hospital, it's got a police station, it's got the CMT with this hunky Matt working, so everyone's glad when he comes. I try to make sure it has everything that they need. And I tried in that way to keep it light because, like you mentioned, it's so hard sometimes to balance with a cozy, to keep it light and positive so that it's always an escape for my readers. And finding that balance, I kind of just carved out the things that might be actually problematic to live on an island, pretend they've got it all figured out.
Well, one of the things they have on your island is iced tea. Everly's Cafe
Yes.
specializes in iced tea. So the gotta get the big question out of the way. For those who don't know, people listening to the show grew up all over the place. So for those who don't know, What's the difference between sweet tea and unsweet tea? Because it's more than just dumping some sugar in a glass of iced tea.
Oh my goodness. Okay. Well, I don't know. Sweet tea is like the drink of the South, and they the Southerners take sweet tea very, very seriously. And when they say sweet, they mean sweet. Not a spoonful of sugar. It's been boiled with it, a couple cups of sugar. And so I tried to really build on that with Everly serves 20 flavors of iced tea on any given day. She tries new ones. She's got archived different recipes from her family. And I try to mix it up. So it's not always that old-fashioned sweet tea that I love, but she puts a twist on it. And so you can come in there and get yourself some basil strawberry tea and some peach tea. And she makes the teas without sugar because dietary reasons. Not everyone can have 2 cups of sugar in their glass of iced tea. So I try to include recipes even where they're using fruit to kind of to make a to sweeten the tea by heating the fruit and boiling the fruit for the sweetness. I've learned to love tea.
And what led you to decide to make iced tea what Everly's Cafe specializes in?
I had just come back from another trip to the beach. It was a summer, and I had just had a ton of tea, more than usual. And it was something that my mother and I, and maybe my mother-in-law, we usually do big family, like we get everyone together when we go and get one of those big houses on the beach, and everybody just breathes and we're just together. But it was almost like a running joke through the week. It was so much tea and more, just crazy amount of tea. And I was saying how it was funny that there are so many tea shops, but when we go to tea shops here, it's hot tea, right? It's hot tea, it's the little finger sandwiches, it's very elegant. You dress up, you go to an old house, and you have a proper tea. But even at the beach where we'd been all week, all these islands, there wasn't an iced tea shop. Like, I felt like there was just something wrong in the world. Where are the iced tea shops where you go and get all the different tea and you go in flip-flops and cutoffs because it's the beach instead of big hats and fancy clothes? And I just ran with it from there.
And you mentioned the wide variety of flavors of tea that Everly serves. Are those based on real iced tea recipes you've come across, or were they specially developed for the book? And she serves food as well as tea. I mean, are those based on your family recipes, or did you have a recipe designer develop them for you?
No, those are it's a compilation. Now that I'm writing the series, I go looking for, it's a tough job, you guys. When I go to the beach now, I go looking for good food for research. It's not just for funsies anymore. But I pay more attention to the menus, and some things just sound so neat. And I will take pictures with my phone of the menu to remember to look up later. I do lots of research, just looking at what's out there and comparing and contrasting. And I do have fun putting some of the recipes together, the easy ones. And then I wrote into Everly's character that she had gone away from the island to study at culinary school. So her recipes that we see on the page are often a little more in-depth than the ones that I include in the book. And maybe that's a me thing, but I think I need something delicious and fast and easy because I'm not a chef. I never have any time. Everybody's always hungry here. So I try to put more every day. Anybody can do this and it's going to be delicious at the end of the book.
Hey, and I believe Everly thinks it's important to have family recipes as part of what
Yes.
she serves. So what is it about a recipe that's handed down through the generations that makes it so special?
I think I wish I had more of them. I have recipes from my mom, and that's about as far back as my little tiny family goes. But the entire series, I've kind of weaved that thread, the importance of history and family and lineage, ancestry. It's been important all the way through. This is a family that that deeply care about the history, not just of their family, but of the island, the town that they helped to settle. And so it seemed appropriate, I guess, that Everly, who loves to cook, would then make her business around the recipes that her family's been serving one another always, just forever. And when you think about how far back that was, these recipes they came from the island, you know, like you said, they couldn't quickly just go somewhere else. So their ingredients were things that they had then. And as the series goes on, Everly makes note in the pages, she's thinking more and more about how important that is, just to have this link to an anchor to that place and to these people, and her desire grows, I guess, to reach out and to pass that on and to push that forward and to share what she has, that she becomes so thankful and really realizes more and more often as the books go on that she can't possibly be cursed, because life is good.
Readers will certainly expect to find sweet tea and family recipes and, frankly, even curses and ghosts in a series set in the North Carolina Outer Banks. One thing they may not expect, though, is surfing. If you hear surfing, you think California, Hawaii, maybe Florida, but surfing is important in this one.
And that came from another trip. I was down there at a different time of year, maybe late in the summer, or maybe it was early in the spring. It was off season for a change, working around my kids' schedule so that nobody missed too much school. And there was a big surf championship or something, and it was taking place on the beach, or maybe it was promotion for it. But I remember that sounded absolutely ridiculous, because I've been in the ocean here, and there are not waves. And I've been to Hawaii, and I've watched surfing on TV. You know, they've got the big giant waves that just, they look, you know, they make the surfers look like little dots on the water. And that's not what you get, or not what I've ever seen in the Outer Banks. But I just haven't been there at the right time of year, and that there's a section called the S-Curves near Rodanthe that is a big deal surf spot, and they have surfing championships there. So put that on my list too, because I'm all about watching some surf championships.
Did you have the chance to talk to any surfers about surfing in Carolina?
No, and I hate that, because I reached out on some different websites. You know, I'm like my sleuths here. That's my extent. That's about how brave I get. But I did send some emails, just some questions, and I didn't get any FaceTime or any, you know, Zoom time or any time to really get anything other than, you know, read the website kind of thing, or what are they, cookie cutter kind of answers. They're probably cut and paste. Someone's job is just to answer with the facts.
What's next for Everly in the town of Charm? More surfing or iced tea?
Yes, lots of iced tea. Okay, so I have good and bad news about Everly and the team. Book 7 will release next spring in March, I believe. It's called Pleading the Fish, and it will be the last Seaside Cafe mystery.
Aww.
So yeah, writing that was super bittersweet. I outlined it when I was at the Outer Banks this April, and I took pictures of myself because I was like crying, and I'm like, this is so crazy, because the characters are real, you know. The authors get very attached, as much as when I read books and get attached to other people's characters. And it feels like their last adventure will be, you know, the last time I get to spend time with them. So that's very bittersweet, but I have to give so much props to my publisher, because they knew in advance that they wanted to wrap it up in book 7, and they told me probably a year. I think I might have been writing Partners in Lime when they told me that that would be it. So I had all kinds of time to think of all the things that readers ask. Will they get the lemon cake recipe? What, you know, is Grady going to drop dead if he loves Everly? Like, there's some, who is the town charmer? There are pressing questions that need addressed. And because they told me in advance, I had lots of time to, I hope, write a book that is so perfect in its conclusion that fans of the series will finish it, be so satisfied that they'll want to read all seven again, because now they know where, you know, now they know. And so it was bittersweet to see it end, but I really truly enjoyed it. And I'm really proud of the results. So hopefully everyone will stick around and read book seven too.
And can you tell us if they'll get the lemon cake recipe, or is that like top secret information?
I saved it till the end, and I'm so nervous that it's not going to live up to. So here is me, who's already told you I'm not very great, I'm not superb in the kitchen, trying to come up with a recipe worth the hype. Okay, this is the recipe. It just gets more and more important as the series goes on. This lemon cake just keeps being more important. And by the end of book seven, I'm like, how am I supposed to come up with a recipe that's been around 300 years, that's, you know, that's everything Grady needs in his life? How can I possibly? I tried, y'all. hopefully it did okay.
I'm sure it will. So what's on the horizon or on the planner after the Seaside Cafe series wraps up?
Well, let's see. I write romantic suspense for Harlequin, so those will still be coming out through next year. And I'm trying to think what else. So I'm starting a new series as myself, right next to Julianne Lindsay. And that was a brainstorm during the pandemic. I was feeling, you know, like we all were feeling, I just needed to do something. I don't know. It was very general. I needed to do something, and I write. So I decided I would write my own cozy mystery series and just be the publisher. So it's a self, I've Partners in Lime comes out on Tuesday. It is my 42nd traditionally published novel.
Wow.
And sometime last year, sitting at my dining room table talking to my mother-in-law about books, I thought, I should just do it. I should just try to write a series and start to finish. I'm going to be the publisher. I'm going to find an artist. I'm going to learn about marketing and advertising. I'm going to figure this out. I'm going to see if I can do it. And if I don't, I tried. And I'm guaranteed to learn a ton, right? Even if you fail, you learn what didn't work, right?
True.
So that's kind of a big deal. That series to me is the Bonnie and Clyde mysteries. I've got an amateur sleuth named Bonnie and her kitty companion Clyde. And, you know, with names like those, what could go wrong, right?
Well, the more that goes wrong, the more interesting the book, right?
The more fun it gets. That's absolutely right. So hopefully there's lots more good food, small towns and quirky characters and banter, because I am a sucker for good banter.
You said that will be under Julianne Lindsay.
Julianne Lindsay, yeah.
And what do you write, pen name do you use for Harlequin?
I'm also Julianne Lindsay. I write that as myself also.
Okay. So Seaside Cafe is the only one you write as Bree Baker?
It's the only one I write as Bree Baker. In October, I wasn't thinking of this, in October, the third book in my Christmas Tree Farm mysteries that I write as Jacqueline Frost comes out. So there's that too. I've been waiting on that for a while.
I guess people probably listening is like, well, I thought this was supposed to be Bree Baker. It's the same wonderful author, Bree Baker, Jacqueline Frost, Julianne Lindsay.
Right.
Lots to read.
Right. Super cute. I'm so sorry.
That's okay. An author by any other name is still a mystery author, right?
That's right. I just love my cozies.
And if readers would like to connect with you under any of your names, where can they do that?
They can find me at julianlindsay.com. I've consolidated every series, whatever the name is, they're right there on the front page. So you should, you know, maybe identify the cover and know, there you are, that's what you're after.
And are you on Facebook or Twitter or anything?
Absolutely. I'm on all. I have a reader group on Facebook called the Cozy Queens, and I try to interact there every day, and I use it more. I have a Facebook page, you know, Facebook, Julianne Lindsay, but those aren't quite as interactive. Those feel more like, you know, just making sure everybody's okay out there. And if there's anything we're celebrating, it's a step back. I think the Cozy Queens, the reader group I started, has been a lot of fun because those are the people who want to interact. And so when I get in there, they talk to each other, they post, you know, I mean, it's starting to feel like a family, and it's a large family, but I really enjoy the interaction and it keeps me going because, it doesn't matter how many books you write. I think you always turn it in thinking they're going to tell me to lose their number. This is junk. So it feels good to be with friends.
And where can friends, old and new and future, find a copy or buy a copy of their Partners in Lime or actually any of your other cozies or romantic scents?
I think anywhere books are sold, I think that I think they're out there. And Partners in Lime is starting. I'm starting to see reader pictures. So even though the official release day is Tuesday, they're starting to show up on shelves and they're out in the wild. It's very exciting. Every single time I get the goosebumps and I'm super excited.
any Outer Banks area bookstores you'd like to suggest people check out?
There is one. There's one I always go to when I'm there. And she just did a big remodel and I'm blanking because on what it's called. It's in Hatteras Village. Hatteras Village Books. It might be called Village Books. I'm so sorry. I should know this. This is my place. The pre-pandemic, I was on my way down there in 2020 to sign books because book 5 was coming out and I'm just blanking right now. I'm so sorry.
You can give directions like they do in the South and say, you know, turn left at this farm and it's no next to the Piggly Wiggly.
That's right.
People would know exactly where it was.
In Hatteras. It is. Yeah.
My family's from South Carolina, so I'm making Carolina jokes. So. I actually love the Carolinas. They're beautiful areas. And so anybody listening to the Carolinas, I'm not making fun of you.
No.
My mother's family is from the South Carolina of the Carolinas. So I love the Carolinas.
All Carolinas make me happy.
As happy as a big glass of sweet tea.
That's right. Yeah.
Hey, well, thank you very much for stopping in today to chat about Partners in Lime and let readers know where they can find you and hopefully find your upcoming independent self-published series and the Cozy Queens on Facebook if they'd like to chat some more about your cozies or any others. Appreciate you taking your time today. And also thanks for telling us about surfing in the Carolinas. That was surprising. I would not have put those two together.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. This is a lot of fun. You made it easy. I was so nervous. Thank you so much.
You don't seem nervous at all, I promise. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in to another episode of The Cozy Corner. My guest today was Julie Ann Lindsay, also known as Bree Baker, author of Partners in Lime, the sixth and next to last, Seaside Cafe mystery. I'm Alexia Gordon, host of the show. Until next time, goodbye. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in to another episode of The Cozy Corner with Alexia Gordon. If you enjoyed the show, please leave a 5-star rating or review. Help me keep bringing you fun and informative chats with authors of cozy and traditional mysteries by supporting the podcast on Patreon at www.patreon.com/authoralexiagordon. Until next time, goodbye.